Hello and welcome to the Go, Go, Grow podcast. This is where you want to be if you're looking to scale your business and grow beyond your wildest dreams. My name is Michelle Page, your host, and we're doing things a little bit different today. In addition to hosting this podcast, I've also had the pleasure of being a guest on a number of different podcasts, and I want to highlight for you one in particular that I've been a guest on. In the summer of 2023, I guested with Corey Bray as the host of the Sales Management Podcast. Corey's been doing this podcast for a long time. He has wonderful insights into sales management, the sales process, and he's one of the co-founders of Coach CRM. So he has amazing insight. So we joined together to do this episode on the founder's dilemma. And we took the angle of, so you build a great product, how do you sell it? Hopefully you'll enjoy this episode. One of the biggest challenges that I hear from founders when they decide to start scaling is, how do you get from behind every single desk and take off every single hat in your organization and start expanding your team? So perhaps that transition from founder-led sales to actually having a sales organization and building out sales and marketing, that's really the start of so many of my initial conversations with clients and founders. So we're going to start with that as the first clip here. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. And I'll be back with you in just a few moments, and I'll introduce the next clip.
Welcome to the Sales Management Podcast, your source for actionable sales management strategies and tactics. I'm your host, Coach CRM co-founder Corey Bray. No long intros, no long ads. Let's get started. I'm here today with Michelle Page, and we're going to talk about the founder's dilemma. You've built a great product. Now, how do you sell it? Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing great, Corey. Thank you for having me today. I'm looking forward to speaking with your audience and solving this dilemma.
It's a dilemma, all right, because there's a lot of things going on here. You got to transition. It's like going from a caterpillar to a butterfly, and we're going from founder sales to something beyond that. Or maybe you're going from no sales to founder sales. So talk us through this idea of the founder's dilemma. What is it in your mind?
Well, the founder's dilemma is, you are an expert in whatever industry you're in. You've built a great technology platform. You've built a wonderful professional service organization. Your manufacturing product is best in class. Okay, great. If you have an interested person in front of you that has a perfect fit for what did you do, you can sell them all day. But if you go into a room of who you think should be able to use your product and they don't know who you are, your expertise and your product is really difficult to translate into expertise for sales. So when you have a founder-led sales organization, it's very, very difficult to scale. Oh, a lot of that is because it's tribal knowledge. And your key cohorts, your key leaders, you have all this knowledge and you need a channel to share it and disperse it.
Our brains don't have an API yet, do they?
That's absolutely correct. Let me ask you, Corey, if you were that founder and you wanted to scale your business, who would you hire first, sales or marketing?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I have been that person. To me, the big question is, how much budget do I have for marketing? Because when I look at it from a founder's perspective, if you got a ton of cash, okay, I'm going to give you two answers because everyone knows I hate it depends. So it never depends. Yeah, it always depends.
It always depends.
You have to make a decision. This is why I always do my business work before my legal work. Somebody says, you should ask your attorney. I was like, yeah, I'm going to ask my attorney once I have my answer to the business question. And so I don't get it depends and get charged for that. My attorney is great. KP, love you, man. He doesn't do that. Some other folks have in the past. All right. So if I've got a ton of cash, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with marketing. because what that'll allow me to do as a founder is to have a larger stream of higher quality leads to fill my calendar to get a ton more repetitions in so I can close a bunch of deals. Now I like sales and I'm good at it. And that's why I would choose that answer, given the fact that I can go to trade shows and run digital ads and do all of these other things that would require an investment. Now, if I am in more of a bootstrap situation, or if I'm in out of cash mode, which a lot of people are here as we set in summer of 2023, that's a tougher thing to do because marketing generated leads are going to probably be attracted on a longer time frame. And it's going to cost some real cash to bring them in, both in terms of hard costs to the things I just described, as well as soft costs to the individual hires that you've got. So I would do more outbound direct sales if I was in the cash strapped position. Curious your thoughts.
So hopefully that clip gave you a little bit of insight into how you make that transition and how you start to prioritize what you are looking for. So in this next clip, the focus of the conversation kind of shifted and we're looking at, okay, well, sales and marketing, they're both pretty darn important. How do you kind of prioritize the two? How do you differentiate between who does what and what you need in your company? So we're talking about marketing, one-to-many, get the word out. Sales, one-to-one, close deals, get revenue. So watch and see what you think and kind of think about which one is the priority for your company. Spoiler alert, they're both pretty darn important.
Well, that's a well thought out answer. So I appreciate that detail. And like you said, everything depends. But for a lot of those early stage companies where you've got a viable product or service and you have some revenue, so therefore you would think you have some budget, you need to think about who you're trying to reach and the most efficient and effective way to increase your revenue. So you really need both. Marketing helps identify who you need to talk to, what the message should be to them, and then they replicate that message one to many. They hopefully have a very strong call to action, but it still requires that prospect to take action. They're one of hundreds of thousands of people, or at least, 500 people, depending on how small your market is, that you want them to take that action.
Yeah.
Now with sales, you absolutely need that marketing 101. You need to know who your ideal client profile is. You need to have the good data list. You need to know who your profiles are and why your product or service matters to them. But then you're in one-to-one situation. It's no longer incumbent upon the prospect to call you because you're contacting them.
Yeah.
So if your messaging is off, you know immediately, I need to pivot. This is what the prospect is telling me. Maybe our ideal client profile is not what we thought it would be. Maybe we have a bigger opportunity here. So marketing does that great brand awareness, but sales generates revenue. Now, how do you reconcile this? You only have so much money.
Yeah, and time.
Exactly.
That's the other issue, right? So the money exists today, but even on these fixed costs that might not be that much over a period of time, if it takes you 6 months longer to get to where you need to get to, that's going to have a material impact on your ability to survive.
So now we've talked about sales and marketing and how you kind of leverage which one you are going to go forward with first and how you're going to split that investment and those priorities. But what about the different makeup of those two different departments? Who do you hire and who does what within those organizations, those functions within your company? So let's think about sales in particular for a moment. If you're looking at who sits in that sales department and what functions they fill, obviously you've got somebody who's got to get the leads, somebody who's got to work the leads, somebody who's got to close the leads. Once you have a client come on board, they've got to onboard them. They've got to service and support them. So how do you define who does what? Listen, and I'll talk a little bit about that structure.
That obviously begets the question, do you do this in-house or do you outsource it at different specific functions? For example, do you bring in a fractional CMO? Do you bring in a fractional sales leader? Do you bring in fractional BDRs who can hit the ground running maybe a little faster than an employee could? Or do you invest in the person that you're going to build up and build a team around longer term? Those are also tough questions.
Did you see my notes?
I did see your notes. I'm not reading them right now. Maybe I internalized them. I've been playing a lot of cards lately. And I think that, you know, you see a hand, you're like, oh yeah, this is where this is going to go.
Well, I did jot down just kind of the train of the natural progression when I speak to a potential client. You know, we kind of work through, tell me about your business, tell me about where you are today, where you want to go, and what are your options. So when somebody needs both, they need marketing, they need sales, but they only have a budget for one. Fractional is a great way to go. If you're at early stage, you probably don't need 2,080 hours a week, I'm sorry, a year, an FTE in marketing and in sales leadership. You need to build that foundation.
Yep.
You need to get the key components down. So bring in that fractional, get you from step A to step B, and then to step C, and then you can decide, what's my next direction? Do I expand this or that?
I oversimplify this, and my take on the whole thing is all you need if you're, and we're talking about startups,
mm-hmm.
all you need if you're a startup is full calendars with the right people.
Right.
Full calendars with the right people, you're winning. If you're under $1 million in revenue, if you've got full calendars with the right people, you're winning. If you're in this $1 to $5 million revenue place, full calendars with the right people, you're winning. You start to get to a place where you've really got to build out a team and an org. And I don't know where that number is. It depends on a lot of things, you know, how big's your deal size? What's your sales cycle look like? All of these types of things, but somewhere between probably 2 and 10 million, you have to really start focus on professionalizing the organization. But until that point, full calendars win.
You're absolutely right, Corey. What a lot of founders will do, they'll say, you know what? I can afford to get one really killer sales rep. You know, get someone in here that knows sales. They know the industry. Maybe they have a few connections and they're going to do soup to nuts, full cycle sales. They're going to prospect. They're going to work the deal. They're going to close it, implement it, service it, sign the contracts for the renewals. They're going to do everything.
They're going to be me, but clone myself.
So the problem is that person only has so much bandwidth, and you get a really key opportunity or a really high maintenance prospect or customer, what's going to go by the wayside? It's prospecting.
Yeah.
And if you've got somebody that really loves to close deals, they probably have a different skill set, core competency, personality, motivations than somebody who prospects.
And comp plan.
There's the big one. That's the motivation for so many of them. So it really is two different roles. If you want that full calendar, if you want to keep that closer busy, it needs to be a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 ratio of business development reps filling that calendar.
I feel like some people are going to think that's a provocative statement. Tell us more about where your math comes from. I'm not saying if I agree or disagree. I just want to dig in a little deeper here.
Absolutely. So if you are an account executive, How many qualified SQLs would you like per week? Assuming you're remote, you don't have to travel.
If I don't have to travel, I'll knock out back-to-backs. I need a break every 3 hours. I'm like a Yorkie, you know, give me a break every 3 hours. I'm good to go. Let's rock it. You know, maybe a nap at the end of the day, but yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, right? Full calendar, different people have different definitions of full calendars. And I guess this is going to be posted later than that, but back in August of 2023, this dude posted something on LinkedIn that said that back-to-back meetings suck. And he just got roasted by a bunch of people. It was like, oh, wow, must be nice, dude, to live in a world where you don't have to have back-to-back meetings to survive. if you're in a place where your company's make or break and you don't have back-to-back meetings, you might have a big problem in front of you. So the whole idea here is just get everything you can. A, it gets you to your goal faster. B, it will make your day go by faster because you're actually doing stuff. And then C, you make more money. And finally, like if you get burnt out from having a couple back-to-back meetings, then A, either you're in the wrong profession, or B, you're not doing your pre-meeting prep in a way that makes the thing easy for you. If you're good at sales, you understand your target market, you understand the personas, you understand the pains that you solve, you understand the type of objections you're trying to get, you should just be able to go into the, it's like the pro golfers that lock up and just hit the shot. You know, maybe they don't do that on Sunday at Augusta, but if you're out just playing on the course, boom, 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 boom. You know, it's not 45 seconds of Sergio Garcia warm-up time every second. It's, I'm here to execute on something that I'm good at. I do it, pack my calendar for me.
Absolutely. And to inject a little humor, I'm a big Friends fan. So the AE that's complaining about back-to-back meetings that have been set for them is like Chandler saying, my wallet's too small for my hundreds and my diamond shoes are too tight.
That's
it's funny. A gift. Take it and smile. Say thank you.
Yes.
So you had asked about the math. So you described a qualified meeting every 3 hours. So we're talking 12 to 15.
Well, I'm not saying what every 3 hours. I want them back to back with a break every 3 hours. If you're giving me, you're setting, let's say you're setting, let's say you're setting 30 minute. I'll just be just super easy. You're setting 30 minute meetings for me. I'll do three row and take a break. And let's say we can do three blocks of that a day. So nine a day. In an ideal world, nine intro meetings a day. And then I'll fit my other meetings in somewhere. And maybe one day we don't get any intro meetings because we're all doing follow meetings. Maybe we only do this three times a week because I know people are going to be like, oh, nine's way too many because you can't fit them in. Okay, cool. Let's say we do intro meetings Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesdays and Thursdays, Friday, I have things in the pipeline. It's 27 intro meetings a week. That would be dream state.
So if you alone were setting 27 meetings, how many hours per week would it take you yourself to set those 27 meetings?
More than exist.
That's why you need three BDRs setting them for you.
Yeah. And again, I'm talking about, so when I say this, I'm thinking about it in the context of my business, which is Coach CRM, which process is intro meeting, second meeting with some other stakeholders, usually a third meeting, and then close. So it's something that's much more of a transactional process. If you're selling ERP or MDM or something like that, you're going to think, no, it's, I agree, back off of it. Less intermediate, fewer intro meetings, more follow on further down the sales process meetings. Agree with that. So whatever your world is, it depends.
On right. And the higher the price tag of what it is you're selling, the fewer meetings that BDR is going to be generate in most cases.
Yeah.
Because you're typically dealing with higher up the org chart and they are not one in 12 closes typically.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. If you're doing enterprise stuff, one intro meeting a day is gold.
Yeah. So that's why the ratio. If you want your AE busy, then you've got to have the experienced, qualified, but probably less compensated BDR, keeping that valuable AE busy. Now, a good BDR is going to cost you, but they are going to be worth their weight in gold when it comes to what they generate. So don't hire, somebody part-time that is just, working through the summer or something like that. You need a higher quality.
Well, so what does it mean though? Is it experience? Is it something else? Is it industry knowledge? Because a lot of these things you can equip people with pretty quickly.
I've always been a believer in you hire for skill and will and complement that with assessments so that you understand communication style, aptitude, things like that. I've always found that it's much easier to learn an industry than it is to learn a function.
Yeah.
If you are a technical engineer and you know fintech, you're probably not going to transition into fintech sales. But if you are a technical engineer fintech and you want to go into healthcare SaaS, probably a leap, an easier transition.
So
one of the things you have, you know, getting back to the founder's dilemma, you probably have identified what your revenue strategy is and your business strategy. So what you need to do is now hire those key personnel in marketing and sales. Again, fractional is a great way to stretch your budget, double your value. You need to translate the business and revenue strategy into a sales and marketing strategy. And that way you can execute with purpose. You're not just band-aiding and duct taping headcount together, but you're actually hiring with purpose. You're building a foundation that you can repeat and scale rather than saying, okay, I need to make my next quarter numbers.
Right. So here's the question for let's talk about the first marketing hire. What's your take on what that person should look like and how many hours a week you need from them?
I believe the first marketing hire should be a strategic planner, somebody that can help you identify not only who your ICP or ICPs are. And yes, I personally believe you can have a few, but also identify what your marketing strategy is going to be. How are you going to communicate this? What mediums are you going to use? What's your calendar going to look like? Are you going to do that trade show strategy? Are you going to do a social strategy, a digital strategy? Those are the types of things you need to do at that 30,000 foot level.
Yeah.
And usually, if you're going fractional, the first 3 months are probably going to be very intense in the number of hours. After that, you may have the option of scaling back a little bit while things are executed. At that point, you can bring in people to do the content to execute that strategy. If you're hiring somebody like a fractional CMO, they're usually not the doers.
Right.
They're the ones that do the strategy. And then you can bring on someone else who is a great content writer.
Yeah. Yeah. The really senior strategists, they were the doers back when the Cowboys were good.
I'm sorry. When was that?
Yeah. No, it's funny. It's top of mind because I was talking to someone in Denver yesterday and I was like, how's the weather? They said, oh, it's Dallas Cowboy weather. It's peaking in the 90s.
Now, Troy and Emmett, they're pretty good.
They're pretty good. Okay. So you got that person in there. And then for the content, things like that, here's the interesting thing. I tried to write some blog posts with ChatGPT last weekend. They were so bad. I threw them away. So bad. Don't do that. I didn't even know what to do with them. I mean, they were so bad. It was to the point where I would have had to change every word.
Yeah. So a client showed me some emails, a cadence of emails written by ChatGPT. I think each one was about 550 words. Like you cannot use this. If it's over 150, you're gonna have to. Yeah, that's like two emails.
Man, that's a lot. That's like a newspaper article.
And then someone showed me a ChatGPT written bio for me.
Okay.
I don't recall if it was taken from my LinkedIn or from my sales chaser's website. I'm like, this is not what I do.
It's funny. Yeah. Okay. So there's still a place to hire people to do things like content.
Absolutely. So we've talked about we need sales, we need marketing. We understand that there's different functions of roles in sales and marketing and how we kind of prioritize that. So let's talk a minute about how we get that handshake between the two, that cooperation, that collaboration. We don't want to just throw in headcount and say, okay, everybody get to work. So how do we make sure that we're not just doing, but we're creating results? If we're going to build a sales and marketing organization, Let's build success. That's what we talk about now with Corey.
So I guess the big question is, in your mind, so imagine somebody has the cash. They can invest in headcount. Are you saying that they hire marketing and sales at the same time, or they sequence them out?
Ideally at the same time.
Okay.
Like I said earlier, it's got to be a handshake between the two. Every single organization has to have communication. That is how you grow. You transfer that tribal knowledge. You make sure that the stakeholders in every area of the company are singing the same song. And if the CTO thinks the product is supposed to do this, and therefore they're selling it this way, but the UI UX person thinks it's speaking to this person, so they're designing it that way. And then the BDR says, oh, wow, this message is great, so I'm going to set the appointment based on this, but the AE is selling that.
Not good.
No. Everything starts with the right foundation, the right messaging, communication back and forth, and then practice and repetition. Practice trumps progress.
So in this situation, if you have marketing and sales start at the same time, I guess I didn't ask you this question. So we talked about the level of person on the marketing side. If somebody's building up their first sales org, what's your take on the role of the first sales hire?
A lot of organizations don't have the investment available, but you really need a strategic hire there as well. If you hire someone who is good on the phone, you're not going to have real direction over how you build that out. That person that you hired that's good on the phone may not truly understand the strategy that you've laid out. They may not have a CRM. They may not have a great data source. If you don't have all that in place, all you're doing is smiling and dialing.
Yeah.
Smiling and dialing is not how you grow your company. So no, I consider that the Band-Aid and duct tape approach.
Yeah. Well, you got to get there though, because you got to get the activity levels up.
Activity doesn't bring results. Strategic implementation of a plan brings results.
You need an employee to do that?
An employee? No.
Yeah.
I've built my business since 2009 on the fact that you don't need an employee.
Right. So you get that set up, and then you can talk to somebody to do the activity. But if you're doing the activity first, then you're in big trouble.
Because then you have to hire me to go in and clean it up.
Exactly. Yeah, not good.
So we've talked about we need sales, we need marketing. We understand that there's different functions of roles in sales and marketing and how we kind of prioritize that. So let's talk a minute about how we get that that handshake between the two, that cooperation, that collaboration. We don't want to just throw in headcount and say, okay, everybody get to work. So how do we make sure that we're not just doing, but we're creating results? If we're going to build a sales and marketing organization, let's build success. That's what we talk about now with Corey.
So when you've gone into cleaning, let's talk about that a little bit. So when you've gone into cleaning things up, what are a couple of things that you've seen where you're like, oh, wow, I'm in cleanup mode. They did it wrong. So walk us through the negative case of what someone did to get in that spot.
The thing I see most often is they have expanded the team and just had everyone do everything and just added more people to the team. So they've got that kind of full cycle sales approach where everyone has, this is more of an established business. Everyone has their set of, 200, 300 accounts, and they're supposed to find new business, upsell current customers, service those customers, take their orders, provide customer service for any resolution of issues, and provide the customer success and referral strategies. So what happens? That rep, instead of calling on 300 customers, they answer the phone for the 25 that call them.
Right.
So when that happens, it tells me that you don't have good job descriptions. You don't have a separation of roles. You hire someone not based on their skill and what they're really good at and what they want to do, but because they're a jack of all trades.
Right.
You want someone who's really good at prospecting, but you're going to ask them to do all this other stuff. You're wasting their skill.
Yeah.
If you have someone that's great at keeping those customers happy and building those relationships, they're not going to want to prospect. So you've got to have the right person matching the right position, which means you've got to have different responsibilities, a great job description, a great comp plan, KPIs that are very clear, and the KPIs that drive the results are also matched to the comp plan. And there's got to be a career path. Not everybody wants one, but there's got to be something available.
But I think this is where it gets really hard when we think about things like the founder's dilemma, is all the things you just described, the probability that that sticks for more than 3 months is very low, because you're talking about bringing in someone early stage and having a clear job description. You can do that day one, but do we have clarity around how it might evolve over time? And I think that's where having that person that maybe comes in on a fractional basis, or at least as an advisor on the front end, like, okay, there's one of two ways this could go. It either takes off and you go in this direction, or you hit stumbling blocks and it goes over here. Because if you give someone a clear job description, clear KPIs, a clear comp plan, a career path, and then all of a sudden what you thought was going to happen doesn't happen, all of that goes out the window and you have to start over again. So the agility is critical.
Yeah.
People aren't up for that job. And that's the hard part.
Well, every document or every process, procedure, every training manual, in my opinion, is a living document.
Yeah.
It needs to be revisited regularly. And I'm not talking annually. I'm talking probably monthly, or every time a new technology is brought on, or a new product or market is included. It needs to be addressed, updated, trained, reinforced, refreshed. And if you're not coaching and monitoring and developing that way with, you know, something like Coach CRM, then you're not doing the proper service to your BDR, to your entire sales team, and to your entire organization.
Sounds like a lot of work.
The heavy lifting is at the beginning, putting that foundation in place.
So what you're saying is, if the good foundation's in place, then the updates, the edits, the tweaks, the pivots, those are easier.
Absolutely.
I buy that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because if you have to start over because your foundation wasn't good, that's, I see people get in trouble there a lot too. Like, oh, we're changing this market. I think the other thing is that I talk a lot about making sure that your team understands the specific pain points that your company solves. I think that's generally accepted as a good thing to do in sales. Well, does the product team understand that before they write a line of code? I've talked to companies and they said, oh yeah, here's what we built. And I say, well, what specifically are you solving with the thing that you built? And they just give me the look. And I said, oh, y'all don't actually know, do you? And there's not everybody does this. I wouldn't even say they're supposed to do this, but some do that and they get in a real bad spot because you just spend a lot of time, a lot of money building something that people don't want.
One of my clients previously, I asked, who's your ICP? They built custom software applications. I'm like, oh, that sounds really interesting. Who do you target? Well, really, we can do anything for anyone in any industry.
Oh, geez.
I'm like, okay, so where's the depth of your experience? Oh, well, he visually draws me this map of everything everywhere. I said, okay, who can best use your service? Narrow this down. Well, we do mobile a lot. We do our EOS, but we do internal processing. You know, I'm like, oh, pardon. You got to give me some help here. So what you're looking at is the difference between an addressable market, who could possibly use your service, and your ideal client profile.
Right.
So when you're designing that product, don't think about, speaking to the founders here and their technical teams, or if it's not a technical product, any type of product, don't think about who can possibly use this cool thing that you're making, but who is that person that would best utilize this, that whatever we have available is the best possible solution for them, and why?
Yeah. Because if you don't know that, and if you're not specific, you can't go tell the sales team to go sell to everybody. You've got to be, because I've seen folks that are in the software development business go out and try to hire sales folks, and it's really tough because every single meeting they have to bring in the founder or the CTO to wait because they don't know the edge case, not even the edge cases. The salespeople don't have to know all the edge cases. That's what support staff and whoever built the product is there for, but they need to know all the use cases. And the difference between use case is something that's common, and edge case is something that's uncommon.
Right. And having 20 use cases it's a mess. It's too confusing. But if you go to someone in industry A and say, our use cases are industries A, B, and C for challenges D, E, and F, they can see themselves in there.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you're pitching a manufacturer and you say, well, this law firm, this is what we did, they don't see themselves in that.
Right. Yeah. It's got to be super relevant. And the customer stories, and the salespeople need to know the customer stories. We talk about this a lot on the show. If they don't know the customer stories, they're handicapped. They don't know. It's tough. And it's not that hard to learn. We talked about this recently with Readwise co-founder Dan Doyen on an episode around, it's not that hard to learn stuff if you understand how humans learn and you put in the work to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, that's great.
So the last clip I want to share with you from the Sales Management Podcast, where I joined Corey Bray, was about kind of pulling this all together. When you build out your sales organization and you make that transition from founder-led sales, and you kind of solve that founder's dilemma, how do you grow as a sales organization? And how do you emphasize that community, that teamwork between the beginning, middle, and end of that sales process, the communication? And a lot of that is practice and integration and making sure that you truly have that cohesive skill set and match. One of the things I like to say, and I'm sure you've heard variations of this as well, practice prompts progress. Not practice makes perfect. Practice prompts progress. So one of the things I do with coaching, my particular coaching style, is to start the brain working and make the person think, whether it is a sales rep, whether it's a sales team, whether it's a founder or an executive. So why did you say it that way? Why did you ask the question that way? What if you used a different keyword? What were you hoping to understand from this question? So those are the types of things when you coach a group, coach an individual. So listen to this clip and see how that practice, that repetition, helps scale not only your individuals that are contributing, but your teams and your organization. So the founder's dilemma can be solved as a new sales organization is no longer dependent on that founder. Check it out.
You also talk a lot about practice. What do you think people should do from a practice perspective on a continuing basis?
I think repetition of anything is not going to make you perfect, but it's going to help develop your skills. It's going to help you evolve. And being in a community, whether it's having more than one BDR, more than one AE, or more importantly, the community between that BDR and AE, practice the conversations that you're going to have. I'm not just talking about role playing. I'm talking about, okay, well, this is the situation
that I had today speaking to a COO, and he told me about this challenge that they're having. Play that out with the AE.
Yeah.
So always be thinking about what did I do, or what did I say, or what did I hear, and get someone with expertise in that and just go over it, replay it. Okay, well, what if I ask the question this way? One of the ways that I found coaching to be most effective when I'm doing one-on-one coaching is listen to a call and ask the SDR, that was interesting the way you phrased that. Why did you ask things that way? Kind of make them revisit, kind of repractice that call. What were you hoping to uncover? What were you hoping they would tell you? If you had asked the question this way, or asked, you know, this keyword, or omitted that keyword, do you think the reaction or the response would have been different? So what are your follow-up questions for next time? Can we walk through that? So it's always about preparing, practicing, and revisiting.
Yeah, and I love how you ask the questions there, because the way you're phrasing the questions is you're driving them to think.
Mm-hmm.
Reflect on, did they actually have a plan? Did they execute on the plan? If your team doesn't have a coaching framework, shoot a note to freestuff@coachcrm.com, freestuff@coachcrm.com, and we'll send you over our 90-minute course on coaching salespeople. And since you sent it to Free Stuff, it's free. Yeah, Michelle, I love it. That's the right approach.
Yeah.
Spot on. Here's a question. Okay, so I have a math question for you.
That was awesome. I have my calculator handy.
Yes. Imagine that somebody is in a spot where they're leading a company, their founder or their other executive. They just found an extra 10 hours this week. Knowing nothing else and knowing that it depends, how would you split that time between marketing, sales, and customer success?
I would probably spend those 10 hours. I would divide it probably 2 hours with marketing and 2 hours with customer success, 6 hours with sales.
What'd you start with?
I would probably start with customer success. Yes. What are you hearing from your customers? I would then go back to marketing, and I want to understand the message they're putting out there.
Yeah.
And give them the feedback I heard from customer success. I think we should incorporate this.
Right.
Get their views on that. And then I go to sales and I listen. I observe. I watch. I have conversations with sales leadership. I have conversations with the AEs and with the BDRs, and then all of them together.
Yeah.
And those conversations are not lectures or training. It's collaborative conversation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The coaching in there.
Yeah, but I always look at everything from a team perspective. So when I work with a seller, that seller and I are a team. That seller and everybody else that's in that role, BDR, SDR, they're a team.
Yeah.
That BDR, SDR, and the AE is a team. All of them are part of the entire sales team, which is in part of the entire organization team. So you are not a silo out there. Especially if you're a remote worker, you sometimes feel like a silo. No, you're part of like seven teams. You celebrate every win as a team win.
Yes.
I don't care if you're the CFO, the AP person, probably not a custodian if we're all remote, but you know, every win is a team win. Communication.
I love it. And that helps other people learn from others, and then it helps people be motivated to help others learn from them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Celebrating team wins. That's one way to turn your lone wolves into team players, because they're people too, and they like to share their wins and success stories.
Right.
I love it, Michelle. Well, we're coming up on time. Any final thoughts here on the topic of this founder's dilemma?
I think the main thing is when you have a great business or even a struggling business and you want help, realize that you being an expert in one field does not mean you have to be an expert in every field. Seek out help.
Yeah.
Whether you're just seeking out information or resources, seek out help. When you find someone or some organization that has the particular insight and expertise that can help you, you should take advantage of that. And don't hire someone just because they are, you know, your neighbor's uncle's friend. You know, they've got to be the right hire. They've got to give you the return on the investment. They've got to bring expertise to you. And it's got to be something that's going to help you build your company.
I love it. And I think that the key piece there also, as we discussed, is you got to be honest about timelines and risk factors.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Because it can't just be a definite thing, because you're going to grow. You're going to be a caterpillar. Then you're going to be a butterfly.
Yeah.
And something else is going to, I don't know what butterflies turn into, big butterflies, whatever it is. And if you don't know where you're going, you might end up someplace else. My favorite quote from Yogi Berra. Michelle, how can folks get in touch with you? Anything to plug today?
Probably the best way is my website, saleschasers, just like it sounds, .com. That has my email, my phone number. I believe it also has my LinkedIn profile. LinkedIn is Michelle Conkle page. And if you have questions, if you're looking for information, content, whatever, hit me up. I'm always happy to have a conversation. And I look forward to answering any questions that you might have.
Very good. Thank you, Michelle. If you want to check out Coach CRM, go to coachcrm.com. We got a free version. We've also got a lot of offers up there for some content. If you want a free copy of that coaching course, again, that email address is freestuff@coachcrm.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast, Apple, Spotify. We're coming at you multiple times a week. We'll see you next time.
So that wraps up how we solve the founder's dilemma of building out your sales organization and moving on from founder-led sales. The goal is to scale, and the founder needs to step out from behind that desk, the sales desk, and get your team around you so that you have the power and the strength in numbers so that you can scale. I hope you like this new format. I love sharing the podcast guest seat with other experts that are sitting behind the mic and discussing wonderful topics that share insight on how to grow your business, different aspects of sales, marketing, business growth, and is additional value that I can share with the Go Grow audience. If you would like more of the Go Grow podcast, please do check us out. We are on YouTube and all the different platforms that you may be watching and listening to your favorite podcasts on. Shout out to Corey Bray, the Sales Management Podcast. It was a pleasure speaking with him. Again, that was summer of 2023. I know he's had wonderful episodes. You may want to check that out. And please share this episode and other Go Grow episodes with another entrepreneur or founder that could also benefit. I appreciate you watching, and I look forward to our next conversation. Have a wonderful day, and go grow.